We want to welcome a very special guest to the Forum Celebrity Podcast. She is the sideline reporter for Tulane University. She also is the host of her own podcast, Before the Whistle. You can hear her on 104.5 on ESPN and the Saints Wire. We'd love to welcome Maddie Hudak to the Forum Celebrity Podcast. Hi, Maddie.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me all the way down here in Mobile.
It is Hudak. So perfect for the Saints.
Yes.
Maddie, I've talked a lot about people, and I saw an article that 87% of the first round draft picks for quarterbacks have failed. And I think that one of the reasons we wanted to have you on is we wanted to talk about Michael Pratt out of Tulane, because it's amazing how bad teams are drafting quarterback. But I was talking to a Denver fan, and I told him I felt he was made for Sean Payton and Denver. And why? Tell us, you're at the Senior Bowl. What did you see that really kind of made you really, because you do cover Tulane, but what did you see to really look, not just bias, but what are some of the things that you saw that just kind of said, wow, these are intangibles that have to be looked at?
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, I was critical of him fairly on day one, acknowledging again that I think when I came down here last year, looking primarily at Tajay Spears, Dorian Williams, but the running back position is so independent of everyone else that you can shine from day one. Whereas, especially covering a wide receiver down here as well, and Jaquan Jackson at Tulane, looking at both those position groups really closely in a way I really haven't focused on probably in years prior, it just stuck out to me how unfamiliar everything is, and that I'm trying to jot down all of the jersey numbers that Mike's calling in the huddle. Well, there are different ones every single rep. And then I think about Jaquan as a receiver having a different quarterback throw to him every single time. So the guys that shine on day one here, I think, are the ones that are just above and beyond those elite level quarterbacks. But to me, you have game film. I mean, this week is not going to change a player's life, to me at least, in terms of the throws that he makes on the field, unless he absolutely bombs it and then goes off in the corner and kind of sulks to himself. What teams have game film, and these scouts have been looking at these guys all season long. I think it's a good way for coaches to see how these guys move on the practice field, because they don't see as much of them during the season. They're focused on being the head coach of their team. But to me, it's those interviews as well, getting to know these teams that have already really looked upon you at this point, and then seeing how you are as a teammate to a group of strangers, because that's essentially what's going to happen to every single guy that gets drafted to a team. And especially at quarterback, you have to be a leader of men, but a leader of guys that you have no rapport with. And so what are you able to do in this short period of time? I'm looking for things like, how is he responding after reps? And I thought that it was a little apparent yesterday that he was just trying to kind of absorb all of the information in at once. And it's hard to really get all that down, get the chemistry down, and then try to think about doing all those extra steps on top of it. But knowing the kind of guy he is, and knowing how much of pressure just does not faze him, adversity does not faze him, I knew that he would come back and really just build on what he was working on the day before. And you could just see having just a little more comfortability and poise in the pocket, and that translating to just his general demeanor. And, you know, I use the word swagger, but he had it back today. And, you know, I was more interested in the way that he was tracking down these guys after reps, before reps, really focusing with them one-on-one, going back to the coach, and then the mental reps. That's something that I think a lot of quarterbacks take for granted in terms of what they can observe and what people are observing them do during plays. And it stuck out to me that he was pointing out the read every single time, going over to that quarterback and acknowledging that. And so I think all of those traits are things that you don't really see on game film, but that really tells you probably more about how they are as a leader and teammate.
Now, before we get in depth with Michael, explain for those that have never really been there or watched it, what is the format of the Senior Bowl in regards to coaches, in regards to media, and to the players? Is it just pretty much a practice, and these guys are throwing, and you kind of have 10 wide receivers, and Drake May will throw to 10 guys or whoever? Is that how it is? Explain the process.
Well, I think the format of it in terms of what the players are tasked with has stayed the same. Everything else has changed in terms of what the coaching staff looks like, what the media kind of has to work with. But essentially, yeah, it is a practice setting. It would be, and I can say that going to as many Tulane practices that I go to, that you're seeing a lot of those individual drills. You're obviously probably seeing a little more quarterback work than you would in a typical practice setting where you'd probably see them off working on fundamentals a little more than reps they don't necessarily need with their teammates. But you know, you do the one-on-one drills, you do the seven-on-seven drills, and then you add in the pass rush, if you will. I know that no one's going full speed here, but that's kind of the team period. And then you do have a game on Saturday, but honestly, most people don't even stay for it just because all of the problems that you think are, you know, something hard to overcome in practice, once you add in, I mean, an offensive line, it takes them months when you have new players to, you know, that's why you have spring camp and training camp and all of that leading up to the season. So to get five guys on the line of scrimmage, have them be able to work in concert, that's what starts and ends the offense. And so it's just hard, I think, for people to parse that much value out of the game itself. But I think, again, it is really just more about that practice setting. And then the way that they've been doing it as of recent is it used to be one team. So the Detroit Lions, for example, were coaching the American and the national team, which are randomized in some way. And so they would have all got people from their coaching staff. I like what they're doing more now, which is just taking from any coaching staff, because I think that just benefits the guys in those positions that are getting these higher opportunities in these roles. And then usually when you are able to pick and it's not stuck and limited to one team, I think it's just in the best interest of the players as well to just be able to have what they see as perhaps the right fit for that particular group of guys. And then I think forming that relationship as well with that position group coach, it is extremely important. You know, they have meetings there, whether or not they ask questions, you know, scouts and teams want to know that stuff just as much as well. So there's this whole other side of things that, you know, we don't necessarily see, but we have that open viewing practice. Each team has their own. And then, you know, you descend on the field and try to find someone you want to talk to in the kind of 10 minutes that you have. But that's the general basis of how the week goes.
Now, the reason I like Pratt is that I have watched Tulane this year, and people forget, I believe without him, they had Mississippi on the ropes and earlier in the season, and I felt they should have won, but it just kind of went that way. But they've had a great season, underrated conference, and I think the problem is with most fans is they just look at the big SEC, Big 12, used to be the Pac-10. The reason I like Pratt so much is that the NFL, everyone's obsessed with athleticism and running. That, to me, is not what wins. Lamar Jackson would have five Super Bowls by now if that were it. To me, you look at Brock Purdy. He's like Tom Brady, where he could avoid a rush, he could avoid getting hit, and he can get that 5 or 10 yard when you need it. And he has, I love his pocket awareness, because if you saw him this year, he knew when to run and he knew when to get that first down. And it was a key because they run kind of a power offense. And I love their offense, and I really enjoy watching them and their coaches. What are some of the things that you think people don't know about him?
That's hot, Michael. What sticks out to me the most about him, and something people might not know, I asked him before spring practice last year what NFL quarterback he watches on film, and his answer was Drew Brees. And that stuck out to me because he is not remotely physically similar to Drew Brees, and he does not have any of those physical limitations. He has the body and the mobility there, but he really is a cerebral quarterback. And it sticks out to me that he hadn't played football until ninth grade. And just to come in, play quarterback at the highest level. And I just think he has such a fire in him and just is such a competitor, where his senior year of high school, he was a starting quarterback at his high school. He transferred to another one with a sitting quarterback in a better division, beat him out for the starting role. I mean, I don't know a lot of guys that are betting their college future on potentially not being a starting quarterback anymore in their senior year, but he did that and it paid off. And then you just hear the things too about how he had already been offered a scholarship by Tulane on his own dollar. He paid for a plane ticket and an Uber to come down for a camp. And Willie Fritz was like, what are you doing here? You don't need to be here. But he wanted to meet the guys and get acclimated with them. And that's, again, when I just think of teams that he would be endeared to, and Sean Payton, just that leader of men in the way that Drew Brees was, but also the fact that he is able to read defenses and dissect them fairly well. He's not afraid to throw over the middle of the field. He has really good touch on his short intermediate passes. He does have the arm to throw the deep ball, but I think it's, and then when you think about Sean Payton, the intermediate passing game and that accuracy there, especially trying to emulate someone like Drew Brees and then using his feet really only when he needs to, but he just is a very well-rounded quarterback to me and always understands where everyone needs to be on the field and is willing to take those dump offs and those checkdowns to the running backs, which is extremely important trait to have in a quarterback. And the term game manager, the discourse around it is tough. It's always a negative connotation. I would consider Brock Purdy to be one, and he's leading a team to a Super Bowl, and he did so in a pack that you can entirely credit to him. And that's the same thing with Michael Pratt and the Cotton Bowl, where it's an offense and a system where there's no I in team, and he never tries to be the hero at the expense of the betterment of his team or trying to thread something where it's a risky decision. His decision-making is really, really sound in his ball security. And Sean Payton, those are huge things for him, but really just to me, those are the top things translating over to the NFL. And I've seen him do it for 3 years now and go through some really hard times and the growth that he made. And I think the 2022 season will forever go under the radar because no one was paying attention to Tulane at the time. And that was a year where they played UCF, Houston, Cincinnati, all these teams that went off to the Big 12, beat them all on their way out. And yes, everyone paid attention to the Cotton Bowl, but how he performed against Cincinnati and then UCF in those final two games, to me, that was really the difference maker. Then you add on the Cotton Bowl, and there was no question to me that he was heading to the draft after this year.
Yeah, I love the way he has guts, where the Cotton Bowl, especially, he made runs, and not just the last run where he picked up the first down. He made runs that you're like, no, wow, good. He just has that feel when to run, and I think that's why, you know, Justin Fields, uber talented, amazing runner, but I think sometimes there's times where he, you know, there's a wide open guy and he'll just take off, and I think that's the thing. What I liked about him is his decision-making, and I missed that.
I'll also add to that, he is not afraid to throw when he's getting hit, and I mean hit. And that is a trait that you are going to have to make those throws at the end of the day. And if you have a guy that cowers in fear, it is a little alarming. Just kind of focusing on really who's been down here for the Senior Bowl. It's interesting to me how they split up the two sets of quarterbacks in each group, because I think there's just a lot more intriguing things to unpack in, I think it's the American, it's whichever one Michael Pratt is in, where the national team goes in the morning, and that's Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr., and Sam Hartman. And to me, none of those guys, you know, those guys to me this week isn't really going to make that big of a difference for them in that way. I will say that I think all three of them have underwhelmed, and that's perhaps the almost kind of the double-edged sword of being one of those really strong quarterbacks coming in here, is if you struggle, then it is a little more of a red flag than the guys that you expect to be those kind of more developmental picks. When my first year I was here, I didn't know really anything about quarterback. I'll admit I'm still much more of a defense person, but I was just trying to get my bearings here. And I just remember that what stuck out to me in all that group of quarterbacks was Kenny Pickett was the only one that had a sense of poise and just that feeling like he's that guy. He's going to be the leader at quarterback. And the other guys there, Desmond Ridder, Carson Strong, they just weren't doing that much. You know, it was just very underwhelming. They weren't performing that well, but instead of going and chasing those guys down, going over the play, perhaps running it again on their own regard, they would just kind of go off and sulk to me. That's kind of what it looked like. And so I think Kenny Pickett, like, he just really took that moment, and how he commanded the huddle, that's what stuck out to me a little more than everything else. But that's, I think, what you're kind of looking to see out of those guys, where there's kind of more of that expectation that they should settle in a little bit more. But it really has been eye-opening to me this year just how chaotic it is for these quarterbacks those first couple of days. And that, again, it really sticks out that those guys especially, they're more here for the meetings with teams for me, but they could really only stand to drop their stock, in my opinion. And that's really just kind of based on their attitude. So you kind of want them, even if they're not hitting tomorrow, to just show a little more in between the reps. That's what I'm talking about, because I just, again, coming from my sideline background, I just see the value of everything else that's taking place before. I mean, that's honestly why I named my podcast Before the Whistle, is because I just feel like we always analyze the play and then the result. And we don't ever really think about any of the factors that have led up to that point all of the time. And that's just kind of, it's been a very underwhelming quarterback this year. Whereas your second group of people, you have Spencer Rattler, Joe Milton, Carter Bradley, and Michael Pratt. Those are all those guys that really could use this week just having that exposure. And yeah, they probably have a different form of pressure on themselves where it's the idea that this is my only chance to really get my name out there. But scouts, they don't care as much about the G5, Power 5 thing as much as people might think. I think that there's a necessary level of competition that you have to have. And for Michael Pratt, if he didn't have the Oklahoma game and the Kansas State win, the Cincinnati UCF Cotton Bowl wins, and then the South Alabama one this year was really just kind of a show off at that point. But those critical wins against those genuine quality opponents and having Power 5 type lines and pass rush and coverage at that matter, then we might be having a different conversation about him. But you know, you see those guys, I think the rapport sticks out more, that they're really all collaborating with one another, and that just kind of endears you to all of them. But I thought to today, at least, Carter Bradley has kind of been more of the standout in that group, even though, like I said, it's hard for me to judge because I do think I hold guys like Michael Pratt to a higher standard just because I know what they're capable of. But I was really impressed by him today. But if I had to be unbiased, some of the throws that Carter Bradley was making today, little Favre-esque, where it was like, oh my God, I can't believe he just kind of threw that window in double coverage, but he hit his target right in the hands, and he throws with touch really well. I sat by one of his teammates in the stands, Javon Ivory, and he was just speaking to how much he lifts everyone up around him. And when he transferred in, that he was the first guy to come over and get everyone that would be involved in his plays immediately familiarized with him. And him being a coach's son, you just know, kind of get that sense that he gets it a little more in that aspect. But I thought he showed marked improvement from day one and stood out quite a bit. Whereas Joe Milton and Spencer Radler, I think that those guys are just, I don't really know necessarily what the vision would be for either of them quite yet. I think that you have some short intermediate accuracy issues with Joe Milton, but you also saw him improve and get into more of a rhythm today. I think by the end of tomorrow, you'll have a much better picture of these guys. But if you plateaued from day one to day two, which quite frankly, I felt the national quarterbacks in Nick's, Penix and Hartman all did kind of plateau today, I thought that you saw some improvement from all these guys. But the only thing I'd say about Spencer Radler is he's had a little more tough decision-making than others where he's thrown an interception and it just sticks out a little because it is such limited reps. I mean, it's a practice with four or five quarterbacks. Yeah. So you only get so many reps. And that's why I just keep saying, I always feel like this week is a lot less about the actual play on the field that people might realize. Because again, nothing is going to change how these guys actually play on tape with players that they actually play on a team with. I think it just is looking at the type of person, player, leader, and teammate that they are, and coachability factor. And that's where I think where you see those guys really seeking out that coaching, it stuck out about Tajay last year. And it really changed his life being down here. And so I think that those guys in that latter group have the ability to change their lives at this week a little more than those front guys do, but no one's really seized it and ran with it yet, which at least keeps it interesting going into day three.
I remember, I'm an Oklahoma fan, and I remember literally the play that Spencer Rattler lost his confidence, and he was never the same. He was the number one quarterback. I believe he's number one recruit in the nation. Oklahoma was just, he was the heir apparent, and he had a bad game where he just could not, he was throwing so many interceptions. Fans are booing him. It was horrific. I felt so bad. And then he went to South Carolina, still had some problems, but boy, that's a guy that I wonder if his psyche just wasn't messed up. And like you talked about with Michael Pratt, so important is confidence. Who are your two best quarterbacks? Who are the two quarterbacks that you would pick if you had a team?
Drake May, I think, is someone that really intrigues me as well. I don't think it would be someone else from here. Obviously, I've seen Caleb Williams. I know that he has an incredible arm, but I think everything that Michael Pratt brings to the table, I don't know how much of that he really has, but I don't know that well. So it's hard for me to just kind of do that. But based off of play, I think that it would not be necessarily a bad pick. But if you ask me out of this group of guys, my answers would be Pratt and Carter Bradley at this point, just because of what we've seen out of them so far. But I'm a note. I have a background in psychology. It's really helped me in this industry more than I would realize. And so that's also, I tend to kind of look at things from a more person standpoint a lot of the time at that position, which people might disagree with. But I just think that that's really, you see the personalities of these guys rather than their play styles this week, at least for me.
Now, let's talk about you. When you first started really taking this seriously, what did you think you would, what was kind of your motivation? Did you just love sports? Did you just want to, you loved being a reporter, you loved getting information, you did, you say you were in psychology, the psychology of the game. What made you so passionate about sports?
I grew up playing soccer and I was always really competitive. I was a captain. I really enjoyed my time doing that, but I was just too injury prone to really ever keep going with it past the age of 16. But I always felt like I was missing the enjoyment of that competitive feeling, the adrenaline and the highs and lows that come with living out a live sports game. And that didn't really hit me, I guess, until kind of the pandemic where everyone was kind of miserable. And I had always talked about football with my dad and we'd really just kind of enjoyed always having those philosophical conversations about it. Mm-hmm. And my mom had ironically told me to go into college for broadcast journalism. I'm actually kind of glad that I didn't, thought I was going to go into psychology. Then I went into the law. And then I got laid off in the pandemic and I had started writing about the Saints because that was the team I grew up watching. My family's from New Orleans, just because I was so bored at my legal job at the time. And so when I got laid off in the pandemic, it kind of presented that rare opportunity of, I don't have to be looking for another job in my area of employment, if you will, which is usually the requirements to receive unemployment. That was all relaxed. And so I kind of just took the opportunity to see if I could really make a run for things in sports and ended up really gaining some traction. So moved down to New Orleans to really try and take that seriously. And then that's how I ended up with this Tulane job. And that to me has been way more of a teacher than any class, any experience that I've ever had thus far. And it just is all that more special being an alumni of the school, just graduating and never really expecting I would end up back there in this type of way. But then going on and just trying to really work on my football knowledge, that's what I've really kind of been focusing on. And it's fun to be able to analyze a sport for a living. I love doing analysis, but it's nice to not have to do it on legal troubles and on on the game of football.
Yeah, I took law for a little while and I said, no, this ain't, I'm not doing tough. This. Yeah. So now, did you grow up in Louisiana?
No, I'm from the Bay Area originally. My mom was just born and raised in New Orleans. And so then I went to Tulane. And so I kind of had my own connections after
that. I'm from Napa. So yeah, grew up in the Bay Area. Oh, yeah. San Mateo. That's where my cousins live. Yeah. Hi. We're big Bay Area people. So you never thought of coming to the Bay Area or doing Cal or any of those? What made you go to Louisiana? You did go to Tulane, but.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I wanted to live in New Orleans. And then, I was covering the Saints when I first went into sports. So I moved down to New Orleans to focus on them. The Tulane job kind of came out of nowhere for me. I had never actually thought that I would be a sideline reporter. So it was just a very unexpected surprise, just to be honest. But I feel like I don't have any connection to Cal or anything like that. But because I went to Tulane, the automatic connection was already.
It's maybe a little controversial, but I think there are some sideline reporters that I think are amazing. And I love their reporting and I love what they say. There's some that, I have to be honest, a little fluffy. But what I like about you is I think when you do Tulane games and now that you, and if you ever get a chance, Tulane's a fun team to watch. I really enjoyed them the last couple of years. Even being an Oklahoma fan, I didn't like how well they played against Oklahoma, but
next year.
Yeah. But the thing was, is that I really enjoyed it. And if you get to see it, you were very active and you took your job very seriously and the information that you gave are very good. Tell people why you think sideline reporters are so important.
Well, at least from a local perspective, I can speak to that. I think it's a different conversation with these national reporters. And I think there is an issue of not being really able to formulate those relationships and then perhaps not having just what I think should be assumed respect for one another as working professionals. Whereas I don't have any of those types of issues. And the access that I've had at Tulane has just really been incredible. But when you're looking at it from a literal sense of the two guys in the broadcast booth are very far away from the field. And you're not only missing out on things that you just can't see up there. Yeah, you can have binoculars, but I always find it fascinating asking our color analyst and our play-by-play guy where they're looking when the play happens, because we're on radio. TV is a different story, but know, Corey, our play-by-play guy, he has to follow the ball. That's usually not how you want to watch the game of football, but he has to. Whereas Steve, who's our color analyst, he's a Tulane Hall of Famer wide receiver. He watches the receivers and their routes. And I have just always kind of looked at the defense, so it works out well. But you'd be missing out on things you can't see up there, like the use of hands at the line of scrimmage and people's pass rush moves and their little stutter steps, just those small little things, and, you know, things that happen after plays as well, where my eyes just might be. But I also recognize, again, not everyone has the access that I have at Tulane, but I think it speaks to the importance of taking those kind of things and running with them as much as you can. And if you're able to attend practice, attend every single one that you can and make yourself visible and there and familiar to the coaching staff, so you're not this alien presence on game day and you're not really adding any stress. Everyone's just kind of used to you being there. But, you know, I pop my head in to a huddle, and because I really try to actually analyze the football game just as much, I know, okay, the coverage wasn't sound on that play, so I'm going to go to the defensive back room now versus the defensive line, who really were a non-issue on that play kind of thing. And then just knowing how these guys are as people, I know when their demeanor is a little off. I just feel like there's so much nuance to the game that is lost if you don't have that sideline view.
People always ask, why do you always try to stream home the school's home games? And that's why, because I think the home game, when you, like, let's say to you or other people, the sideline reporters know the team. They've been to the practices. They know the players. They know their demeanor. They know when someone's given bad language, body language, or someone's struggling or whatever, a quarterback or a defense feels defeated. And those are the kind of things that I want to see. It's the mental aspect of the game. Because if you have, obviously the injuries are important, but those are the kind of things that I like to look at, is that what are the body languages of the quarterback? Like when Lamar Jackson slammed his helmet down after that, you know, those are things that you look at that are like, wow, that tells you something, that even he's starting to lose faith a little bit here. And then Brock Purdy, they're struggling, and he didn't really react. You know, he didn't really say anything, and he just went to the sidelines and just kind of got some water, and they rehashed. Journey came on, gave him inspiration at halftime. Mm-hmm. But those are the kind of things that I really like about sideline reporters that I look at. And I think that's something that you give, because I think sometimes they get a bad rap, and people are just like, oh, they're just pretty girls. And just, but some of them are really, really good. Laura Oakman, I love her.
I love Laura.
And she's very good. And there's so many really good ones that you really do kind of look at them for guidance. People don't realize that these announcers sometimes are a mile away from the field. They are nowhere near. And you can't really see it. Like you said,
a lot of work. I don't think people realize how much work you put into this.
Now, I'll give you the last word. What are some things that you're looking forward to in the future for your career, for things that you have? You have a podcast, and we'll be promoting that. So we want to make sure that people, we've already checked out some of her work and some of her podcasting, and she's really good. She's cerebral. I think she gives good takes, and I just... Some of you guys get caught up into, and nothing wrong with the big wigs and the nationals and all that stuff. I like the smaller podcasts because I think that's where you really get the meat and potatoes of things. And you're not just doing it for entertainment, like a Stephen A. Smith or someone like that. We're friends with some of the national ones, so no offense, but that's why I like you so much, is you're kind of real. And I really think it's refreshing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I just think that, you know, even though I've never played this sport before, I think people have the ability to learn from every type of walk of life, every type of person. And that's really just something I try to bring. And it is a very unique experience. And what I'm really just looking forward to, I don't know what my future holds for me, because I'm not really entirely sure what the end game is for me yet. But what I've been, and it's been just purely by circumstance, but to watch the greatest single season turnaround in college football history, what went into what went wrong, watching that offseason, being able to sense that the tide genuinely was changing, watch that happen, watch them then follow that up, and now watch a new era begin with a new coaching staff, a new quarterback after having the same one all 3 years that I've been the sideline reporter, pretty much most of the guys that I'm familiar with no longer being there, and watching how a new philosophy gets implemented. I just feel like, again, I have taken scouting courses, and that's a completely different way to learn about the sport. But not ever being able to play it myself, to see the way that all those kind of things go into how to build a team, how to conduct an off season, and it being a different type of experience for me every single year. I'm just looking forward to taking another learning experience out of this season.
Now, Maddie, before we let you go, I have to ask you, the Super Bowl, the Chiefs, the 49ers, what do you think? Do you care? Do you have an opinion about the game?
I would have in the past. I used to have a lot more of, a rivalry with the San Francisco 49ers, especially because I grew up there and very hostile-ratory, but I can't lie. I like Kyle Shanahan. I like the fact that he has absolutely dismissed the sunken cost fallacy in a way that no other coach to me has ever been able to do to such a decisive level where, yeah, they drafted a seventh round guy who was better than the guy they traded three first for, at least for what they were trying to do and where he was developmentally speaking. And so rather than continue to stick with the guy because you invested so much capital, now they're going to a Super Bowl with the guy that they kept instead. So to me, they're just such a fascinating, refreshing difference from everyone else. And the fact that Kyle Shanahan is able to bring these teams to the Super Bowl without having that quarterback. And I think they have a better quarterback in Brock Purdy than they did in Jimmy Garoppolo. But, it just his ability to build such a good team. And then you have the kind of exact opposite to me in Kansas City right now, where you are really relying on quarterback. I honestly kind of want San Francisco to win it just because I think that it would be just nice to have something new. And again, it would be just such a good story. And I think if you're not rooting for the success of Brock Purdy at the end of the day, you might not think he's the best quarterback or have your own evaluations of him, but what he's been able to do, especially coming off of whatever surgery he had this offseason and coming from the scout team to leading his team to the Super Bowl, it's a story that I'd rather get behind, even though I love what Taylor Swift has done for the NFL in terms of making everyone so angry and spending a thesis to talk about these 44 seconds of overwhelming airtime. Oh, they probably could get a course in yelling about this subject matter, but also just seeing all these little girls that otherwise would have never paid attention to this sport. The NFL was never going to get as a fan base. And I appreciate that they at least recognize that.
Me too. I agree with you.
And a coach that cares about defense, because look at all the number one draft picks, their front seven. They tick a lot of junk for why do they need another defensive lineman? Why do they need another linebacker? And look at their defense. It came through in the second half and they really shut down the Lions. So they've done it a different way, like you said. It's really refreshing.
Yeah, it just, especially because I don't feel like quarterback has been that great this year, it would be kind of nice for a team to just win it.
Well, last thing I interrupt, Florence, is seven of the top eight final teams were top 10 on defense. So in the NFL. So that tells you that defense still wins championships. So that was a big thing that someone brought up and I couldn't believe it. So
that is incredible.
Maddie, thank you so much for being our eyes and ears at Senior Bowl.
Of course.
Because we've loved your content. Like I said, we are admirers of yours and of all the hard work and passion and love you put into everything that you do. So we so appreciate you coming on the forum and speaking with us and letting us know what's going on. You have boots on the ground, and to us, that's absolutely the best. So thank you so, so much.
Thank you, Maddie.
Of course. Thank you, guys.
And also, last thing, we always have friends. We do not just bring people on and say, see ya. We really take this seriously, and we're very loyal, and very marketing is a big deal to us. So we're going to share everything about her. Please, please make sure that you share her stuff and retweet us and make sure that you follow her because she has great stuff. Thank you, Maddie.
Absolutely. Great. Thank you guys so much.
Take care.
Thank you so much.